Hi, I'm Maria Theohara Silvella says on social media. Welcome back to Sir Over 50 podcast on Soul Organized Style. Grab a cuppa and relax with us.
When customers come in, on the counter is volunteers. So the volunteers serving them, that's the beauty. This one-on-one exchange, that's when the skill sharing starts. That's when the exchange happens between generations. And these young people that come back because they've got on a certain day, and the same with all ages, they'll come back because whoever's on that day, they've befriended because they're here because they want to be. What you see happening in the shop, that's the magic. That's why when I had to look at everything we were doing at the house and where we needed to really focus, I decided it was a haberdashery because the magic happens on that floor.
That's Ros Holt, the CEO of the Nest Community, a Brisbane charity that connects women purposefully through craft. The Nest Community has just undergone an expansion and moved from a beautiful old house in Everton Park to a larger commercial space in Brendale. Thank you to the Patreon supporters of Soul Organized Style Podcast. Your monthly contribution keeps me producing these episodes for free. Sober 50 intersects with all communities. We're a community that is sober ageism. We're positively leading, being visible in the sewing world. Last year I went to Brisbane Frocktails and you meet lots of different people when you go to gatherings with people who sew. And I was introduced to Ros Holt. Now, she is the founder and CEO of the Nest Community, which is a charity in Queensland. And many sewers who live in Queensland and others who have visited Queensland go to the Nest Community for a whole range of reasons, including buying pre-loved fabric and haberdashery. Would that be right, Ros?
Correct, yes.
So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're more than welcome. I'm really honoured that I could meet you at the time and that you agreed to come on the podcast, because it was Sandy Back, who is the Sober 50 Senior Social Editor that I do volunteer work with, and she was like, Maria, come here. So it was really great that we got to chat.
It was a wonderful night.
Yeah, they did a really good job in getting a lot of people who didn't know each other together, as well as people who did know each other, just come together for a night out.
Yeah, it's amazing when people that are makers in the community find it very easily to come together because they all have a common purpose and they're usually quite passionate about what they're doing. And I think what Frocktails did was, so you don't go out often going to say, hey, I made this. You know, years ago, everybody made everything. Now, it's a nice opportunity for people to go, that looks great, fantastic sewing. Because if you are a home sewer, you don't get a lot of opportunities to explore that. And I noticed people, all they were doing was talking about making. The conversation is just purely about that.
And there's lots of admiration. People don't glaze over when you're talking about your sewing, which is really refreshing.
Yeah, exactly. And incredible that that whole thing is created online.
And it's hard not to enjoy yourself with all of the planning that goes into it. That committee were just full on the whole time.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Very passionate and dedicated. Every time you put your hand up for any volunteer work or capacity, hold on tight.
Which brings me to the Nest Community.
Yeah.
Can you start explaining what inspired you to create the Nest Community around the values of sustainability, skill sharing, and handmaking?
In 2012, my daughter was actually 10 or 12. She was diagnosed as Asperger's and she was really struggling at school to socially connect. And that led into not having a lot of plays or friends come over because she struggled with that. I had an artist practice that I'd had for about 10 years. I had a technique called Cool Brulee, which was working with heating leather. And then it was fashion accessories from bangles, very much catwalk type stuff. And I exhibited that throughout Australia. So I actually had a studio, but I also had a sewing machine in the studio where I used to make clothes, and also if I had to make curtains or anything like that at home. We managed to get a friend over for a play and they saw the studio and they were like, wow, this is amazing, because not every kid has a studio in their home. So we sat down and we started doing a few projects, and eventually the word got out that Eddie Rose's mum had a studio. So now everybody wanted to play with Eddie Rose. Some of the mothers approached me and said, look, could you teach our kids craft? And I was like, well, yeah. And I found a little cottage across the road. My girlfriend, Jodie, she was really into sustainability, because sustainability 10, 12 years ago was not a big word. She practiced that for 20 years. Jodie was the first person that wouldn't buy plastic, and everything was divided up and put into special bins. And she was a very thrifty person through being sustainable. So we set about setting up this small business where the parents paid us to look after their kids and we teach them craft. And again, the sustainability came about because I wanted to keep the costs low by using, reusing and reclaimed materials. It was cheaper to run the classes. And Eddie Rose, and this is where I understood a yep. little bit about girls teaching girls, or the idea of mentoring, and that mentoring can start at any age and it's an exchange. My big thing is you receive as much as you give, and that happens through mentoring, and I see it all the time. So we started doing these classes on a Saturday afternoon, and having been in brownies, I kind of stole a lot from brownies. So the little girls had to make their own aprons. Then they had little felt badges, and we divided them in because it started from 4 girls to 20. And so there, me and Jody are teaching 20 girls. If you've ever had taught just 5 girls, it's a lot of effort, 20 kids. And then we came up with this idea of the bluebirds and the red robins, which I stole from brownies. And the bluebirds had to teach the red robins what they knew. So there's the empowerment. We started with this empowerment that I was talking about, skill sharing. And my daughter was now my yep. sidekick. So my daughter that was socially inept was now running the classes with me, and she's 12. I'll just say to that, she's going to actually now be, 10 years later, she's working for Autism Queensland as the fundraising officer, and she's going to be the first junior board member at the Nest.
Congratulations.
Yeah, she's really, you know, the whole idea of what the Nest has done, the empowerment is really significant. And the social connection that she learned through that. Skill sharing is really important, but it gives people the confidence when you're mentoring. This idea was really important. I mean, I was teaching them how to, remember when the plastic bags you got over the counter, you used to be able to actually heat them. If you put them in between 2 sheets of baking sheets, you could heat that up and you could weave with that material, the plastic. We cut it up and then you'd heat it and you'd end up with this plastic sheet, which is really beautiful and really colourful. So that was one of our projects. And we taught the kids how to make pencil cases. My favourite one was a Mother's Day beach bag concept. And each girl in the class had to bring in a dress that was her mum's that she didn't want to wear anymore. And then we cut up the dresses into strips. And then from those yeah. strips, each girl took a strip from the other girl, and we made these patchwork beach bags. That was because it was cheaper than going and buying fabric. We got them to bring in this fabric. And then people started hearing what we were doing and donating stuff to us. We taught the girls how to dye fabric using vegetables and how to sew. Some of the little girls were so little that we had to put bricks under their petal. They could do it. So as I say, the mothers started coming to us. Jody and I can't do this. The demand was pretty big. And I was also not really making a lot of money because some parents were coming to me and they couldn't afford to pay, and my social conscience was coming to play. So we were covering costs, and I figured, well, I think this is a great community concept. I need other people to help me. I then reached out to a lady called Rebecca Casson, and she was doing at that stage Brisbane Brownouts. I thought, well, if her ladies could become our mentors and help us, then we could start to expand this concept of women and girls coming together for a common purpose of craft.
As Roz has mentioned, many people have helped with the development of the Nest community. So a significant point in time was that in 2014, with the help of the local politician Tim Mander, the Nest community set up a home in Everton Park and created a space that was like stepping back in time to grandma's house. And when Roz talks about the house, this is what she's referring to.
But we needed somewhere to do it because the cottage was too small.
Park.
So I approached the local MP, Tim Mander, and said, I've got a great concept for a community space for women. Menshed was taking off then. In my naivety, I thought, well, the government's funding men's sheds. Why can't they fund a space for women? But in all the pitches I did at the time, with the assistance of Tim Mander, we got a pretty negative response. Basically, what we were told was that women didn't need a space to connect. What we were told was that men needed that because women just naturally can do it anywhere. Now, I'd never run a charity. I'd never run an organisation. I had no clue how to go about it. Rebecca had a bit of experience in that area, the community sector. So she assisted with some of that. But all I did know was how to run small businesses. I ran several over during my lifetime. So I figured, well, how about I apply a small business principle to the organisation? At the time, I didn't know about how to apply for a grant or to fund things. I thought the government was the only option. So what was to follow then was that I figured, well, I need money. I will start taking classes. And Rebecca and I spent our weekends taking classes. And the money went into the organization. I think in the first year, her and I together, I do it at night time on the weekends. I was working full time.
Yeah.
We raised $20,000 just from putting on classes. The other key factor here was that I have a background in graphic, so I built the website. She was fantastic from a community's governance perspective. The website, really, when you ask people in those early days, people would get there and say, oh, wow, it really is like this. It really reflected it. And I think to this day, I'm very focused on people say, well, what do you need to build an organization? And I say, you need marketing skills because the marketing is very expensive. Whereas most people these days can't do that. And if you can't look professional, then they won't gravitate to what you're offering. Unfortunately, that's really key. A lot of community organizations don't look slick and they don't look inviting. For we're so used to now being given such good graphic material. And the other thing that was really important is Eddie took all the photographs. She's a brilliant photographer. So we had this website that wasn't just stock photos, it was real. They were beautiful. If you look back on a lot of the early images, and to this day, I still use some of them. They were really special moments in time that she captured. It's actually her superpower. That combined, we could create the temple and the people came. I love entertaining people. So it was in the early days of where people were really wanting to go to a workshop experience. All the while, we were charging people, but it was low cost. That was essential, is that everybody should have the opportunity to connect. We understood that in the DV sector, now this does not sum up what the Nest is about, but through understanding more about the DV sector made me understand this idea about safe places for women. One social worker said it's a soft entry point for a woman to talk about some issues that she may be having. So I saw as that is really important. It doesn't matter what you walk through that door with, there's people there, there's friends. There's no social workers, but you can find a friend. That idea that we were running low-cost workshops and that we were giving back to the community and supporting through that the funding to create this space and this home. It was really vital that it be a home. This community group came down from Noosa and they walked around and they said to me, oh, there's no way we could afford this because the whole house, Fallon Cottage, was beautifully decked out in character furniture. And I looked at her and I said, but it's all donated. Everything that we did in that house, the women gave. It was just all pool of community resources coming together in a home, and the women looked after the home. That then extended into people giving me, well, we'll donate you some from our stash because we don't need that. We're not using our stash. So I started getting all these donations. Before long, one of the rooms in the house was chock-a to the ceiling of donations because people may not have money, but they've got this stash that they're terribly embarrassed about. So they started turning up, and then some of the stuff hadn't even been used. And I'm like, wow. And at that stage, I was working part-time because I had to support my newfound social conscience.
You are socially motivated.
Yes. And I figured, wow, this is good enough to sell. Why don't we sell this stuff? We can make probably just as much money we're doing with workshops and we'll sell it. So that's how we came to have the haberdashery, which really is the heart of the community. We tried lots of different things, but at the end of the day, I would look around and the haberdashery was something that women just love to be part of. Taking workshops requires a special person. Not everybody can facilitate a workshop. We facilitated over 900 workshops within a period of 7 years with the community through volunteers, from learn to sew through to embroidery. Again, just that whole idea of everybody was in this space of making this happen. But by this stage now, we're pretty much self-funded. But the problem was we were in a house and it really wasn't zoned for commercial purposes. That became a bit of an issue. So we went from an initial founding committee of 14 women to now 60 women a week were helping us to open the doors. And that still continues. We've got about 130 volunteers now.
Oh, okay. It's gone up.
In the early days, it was maybe 20 or 30 committed people. The most important thing I think was that we weren't just sorting through, like in a normal thrift center, everybody had a great knowledge of craft and what was important. And coming and being a volunteer and sorting through donations for craft and thrift is not the same as a thrift shop, because most of the ladies just, it gives them their buzz. If you are all those crafters out here that are listening, just to look at a beautiful piece of fabric kind of helps you out for a couple of weeks if you don't have to go and buy it. The volunteers we have now, when the stuff comes in, they get to sort it and look at it and price it. Pricing and everything comes from the community.
And I've heard that some of the volunteers will take the haberdashery home and make sure that it's wound properly.
Yes, we're founded on community. We are a social enterprise, but social enterprise these days can mean that you're just a business for good. But we are a charity running a business. If you come to our haberdashery, you walk in and you can see the love, because everything has been repackaged. I call it a resource recovery centre.
I like that phrase you've used.
Yes, we repackage what you've donated and it looks beautiful on the shelves. And I'll say to people, like, there'll be a stand hanging all the different sizes of zips, for instance. They've all come in individually in big plastic bags, and somebody sat and coordinated them to all go onto a stand. And it looks, for all intents and purposes, like something you'd see sitting in a retail shop. It's the attention to detail and love and care. And now we have this most beautiful premise.
And your current premises are at the sheds at Brendale. From September to December last year, 11,000 metres of fabric went through.
Yes, I've got some new stats for you. I did. We would save from our donations that are given to us at least 60% of what is donated to us. But your major thrift stores would be lucky to save 20% from what's donated to them. Yep. 60% of what's given to us makes it to the floor. 30% that gets discarded from us at the moment. Each week, we get about 7,000 litres of donations. That is the same as 6 to 7 small industrial bins. Mm. That's how much donations we're getting in this one location. And that's growing. So each hour, we have about 30 customers through the store. On a Saturday, we're open from 10 to 4, we would have on average about 130 customers. It's growing. So since September, we've sold nearly 22 kilometres of fabric. That's not including all the notions. The volunteers is fairly stable at the moment. Volunteers, a lot of planning. We've used a lot of SWOT analysis. We operate from a platform with the onboarding of our volunteers. I think sometimes in the past when people came to the house, we were quite surprised how advanced we were in our administration of the organisation. And that comes from thousands of people making this happen. I mean, you're talking to me, but there are so many women I could talk about that, you know, in particular, my mom, she passed away last year and we've named one of the rooms after her, but she ran it when I went back to work. I just couldn't do the hours I was contributing and working full time.
Is that the Gladys Mary Studio?
Yes, that's mum, yeah.
Oh, that's lovely.
At that point, she would have been 83 and she won Volunteer of the Year for her contribution to the development of the community, which she did for about 3 or 4 years. So she would have been 80 when she started. And when she got to 83, we started to phase in more of the systems that we've got in place now, which she was a big part of the development, the growth of what we do, as were many women.
So we're now at 2024 and you started off by running classes for friends of your daughters.
Yeah.
To where you are today. What do you see will be happening in 2024?
It's a stabilisation of what we're offering. We constantly get people that say, well, where does the money go? It goes to here. It goes to creating everything you see. We have so many good stories. This simple concept of a safe place where women can connect and come together as a body, achieve some amazing things. It's what I say on the website. When women come together, they make amazing things happen. They just get on and do the stuff.
As you've just heard, Ros started providing craft classes to help her daughter socially. There are so many people that Ros credits for making the Nest community what it is today. In the next episode, Ros and the volunteers will chat about how their contributions continue to keep resources from landfill and provide social connections through the Nest community. This episode of So Organised Style podcast for Sober 50 was produced by me, Maria Theoharis, with permission of Ros Holt, sound by bensound.com. If you want to provide a guest post for Sober 50, make sure you direct message Sandy at the Sober 50 account on Instagram. You can subscribe to Soul Organized Self Podcast, but with an S not a Z, on all good podcast apps. Make sure you go back and listen to our free Sober 50 podcast archive. And if you can, please consider supporting the production of this podcast on Patreon. We look forward to joining you in your sewing room next time. Stay safe, everyone.